Today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
It's just about that favorite holiday, St. Patrick's Day. And around St. Patrick's Day, we're all a little bit Irish, aren't we? Well, today we've got the real deal on A Taste of the Past. Hi, and welcome to A Taste of the Past here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Linda Palacio. And today, in honor of St. Patrick's Day, we have a very special guest, straight from Dublin. I have with me in the studio, Clodagh McKenna. Clodagh is a celebrity chef, here and in Ireland. She is the author of 4 books and a brand new one out, 2 television series. You can actually see her series on PBS. It's called Irish Food Trails. Clodagh, welcome to the studio.
Thank you so much, Linda. I absolutely am in love with Heritage Radio.
Oh, that's a good advertisement. We want to hear that, Jack. You can cut that one. Okay. The St. Patrick's Day, of course, is one of the biggest holidays, I think, around the world. And it is celebrated around the world. I don't know how this started, but it's been celebrated for over 1,000 years, right?
Yeah, that's right. I actually think the big celebrations actually started here in the USA. So I guess we have you to thank for that, for all our visitors that come on St. Patrick's. But I guess at home growing up, it was quite different when I was a kid. I love thinking back of those times, actually, growing up as a kid, because it was really about, you know, the small little parade that happened. You'd wake up first in the morning and there'd be the big, massive fry. So you'd have everything, you know, everything that you could have on a traditional breakfast, we would have that morning. It was like, you know, my mother's, you know, morning glory of the fry.
Well, and all restrictions of Lent were lifted for that day.
All restrictions of Lent were lifted. And in fact, it was one of the biggest highlights as a kid on the parade, because all that would be in the parade when you were growing up younger would be, you know, the Irish dancers, there'd be, you know, the traditional music, and there'd be the majorettes, you know what the majorettes
mm-hmm.
are? You know,
mm-hmm. Sure, baton twirlers.
Yeah, exactly, baton twirlers. And then at the very, very end, there would be this little van and they would try bazookas. And these bazookas are basically bubblegum. And we'd all be, all the kids would be just waiting at the side, you know, of the parade. And then it'd be literally like a ready, steady, go moment. We'd be jumping over and running towards the back.
And they'd throw out pieces of bubblegum.
And you'd be trying to fill up all your pockets with them and, you know, open up your, you know, pulling out your sweater so you could catch as many as possible. Oh, it's just so funny.
Well, from bubblegum to green beer, I don't the holiday took a little bit of a little change.
Turn. Yeah.
But it is indeed a very celebratory time. And I think the religious part of the holiday kind of went out the window for many, but I say everyone's Irish on that day. It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
you know, and I'll get to celebrate.
It's still quite religious in Ireland. Mm-hmm. It is a national holiday.
Right.
It is a holy day in Ireland, and I do go to mass myself, and I do on St. Patrick's Day as well. And people still do. So there is that part of it that is still in Ireland, and certainly having dinner around the table on St. Patrick's Day is still a big thing, and everybody does cook traditionally on that day. Now, you know, as you know, food is kind of is changed quite a lot in Ireland over the past few years, but definitely on St. Patrick's Day there is that kind of, you know, that remembrance back to traditional foods, which is lovely.
Then I want to hear about those traditions. So what would be some of those traditional foods that would appear on the table?
Do you know what? I think for every family it's always like what the best dish that their mom does. And because we grew up in, you know, Irish food is wonderful, but there isn't like a huge cuisine in Ireland like there would be in countries like Spain and France and Italy. And so the dishes would be quite limited to what we had. So the big traditional dishes would be the bacon and cabbage, which we didn't cook an awful lot of in my house. Mine was more stews. And my mom's big dish was the beef and Guinness stew.
Mm-hmm.
And she would make it the day before. I think also because she worked full time and there was four kids in the house. But to her luck, I guess, as well, it always tastes so much better the next day. And she would slow cook it in Guinness. And so she'd braise off the lovely pieces of beef. There'd be onions in it, and she'd chop them all up. Now I use shallots in it. She'd put lots of wild mushrooms in there as well. And then she'd chop up little pieces of smoked bacon to give it that lovely flavour. And garlic in there, and thyme in there, a little bit of rosemary. And she'd brown them all up and fry them all up to kind of just encourage all the flavours to kind of to come together. And then she'd put in beef stock into that as well. And of course, back then at the butcher's, you could go in and ask for, you know, some beef bones and make your own stock. Uh-huh. And so she'd kind of braise off the beef bones and make a stock, and then add in Guinness and just let it slowly cook away all day long for, you know, I don't know, about 3 or 4 hours. And then we'd get lovely creamy mashed, you know, mustard potatoes to go with. It was, it was delicious. It's still one of my favorite nostalgic kind of dishes.
Yeah. And well, that's and certainly a true home style dish. Mm. Really is a good home style, and it's very much in vogue once again. I mean, stews, short rib stews, beef stews. I mean, they're very much, you know, that home cooked type of meal, comfort food. Is
absolutely, it is comfort food, isn't it? It's like on a cold day like today, that's all you want to eat.
That's
and
right.
They're cheapest chips to make, because you can use, you know, the lesser expensive cuts to cook with them, and they're so simple to make. You know, it's like basically two steps, and the cooking time, you know, isn't your time, so it's
that's right.
Yeah,
it's put it in the slow cooker or in a pot on low heat, and there you go.
Exactly.
Okay, and soda bread. We always have to have soda bread here in this country.
Yeah.
Okay.
What are your views on soda bread?
Well, I mean, you know, well, you tell me about true Irish soda bread. If you know that it's, I know you have some wonderful recipes in your books for soda bread, different types of soda bread. But it didn't contain all the sweetness that we see today, the sugar, the raisins, and
I think the classic soda bread really was made because, was made because it was just so easy to make, and also it just had such few ingredients. So really, you should just be able to make it with buttermilk, you know, and wheat flour,
mm-hmm.
and or wholemeal flour, and that's all you really need, and of course some soda, just so that it will rise. Excuse me. Now all the other additions are all kind of, we'll say, add-ons, if you, for want of a better word. But the classic soda bread like that is absolutely delicious. The secret, I think, to it as well is that it has to be done by hands.
Mm.
You know, like anything that's beautifully done, whether it's a piece of furniture or not, when the hands are used, there's more care in there. But a light touch as well. So when you're making your sodas, you know, you put your sieve of your flour in and your soda in and make a well in the center, and try to, and slowly pouring in your buttermilk, try to actually get it mixed together as soon as possible. The dough should be wet when you're put, you know, when you're flatting it out and actually making it into a round and then into the oven. And they're the things just to remember, you know, good quality buttermilk, good quality flour. And it's very simple, basic kind of elements to it.
And like a biscuit, don't handle it too much, right?
You know, yeah, exactly.
Mix it by hand. Well, it's interesting because here in America, breads that are made with baking powder and baking soda, we refer to as quick breads.
Oh, really?
As opposed to a yeast bread, which has to rise, you know, take time.
Yeah.
And, of course, traditionally in Ireland, the wheat that was grown was a hard wheat. And so it didn't take to yeast quite as well as it did to soda. I think it was probably one of the reasons it came about, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
And I was actually going to add as well, actually, what I usually do with my soda breads as well is sprinkle some pinhead oatmeal as well on top of it, which gives that lovely crunch. And it's because soda bread, sometimes, I mean, I love the consistency of a crunch on the outside of my breads, like sourdoughs and even the pizzas here at Roberta's, even if it is a pizza, that crunch on the outside and that softness then in the inside, just those different kind of textures. So, yeah, try putting pinhead oatmeal over it. You get that lovely crunchiness.
Oh, nice. Mm. Yeah. You know, and when you say pinhead, describe to our listeners what you mean by pinhead oatmeal.
God, how do I describe that?
It's supposed to steel cut oats.
Oh, is that what you call it?
Yeah, steel
okay,
cut.
Yeah. Steel cut oats,
yeah,
everybody.
Okay, so we said that quick breads made with soda as opposed to risen breads with yeast. And yet here in America, one of the ways, at least from my childhood, something that really spoke of St. Patrick's Day and Easter, you know, both holidays coming around the same time, hot cross buns. Are they an item in Ireland? Are they a big iron item?
Can you say hot cross buns again, Linda?
Hot cross buns.
Okay, I just had another Jane Fonda moment. I'll take that. But yeah, hot crisp buns. Oh my gosh, they're one of my favorite things in the world. Yeah, I'm not sure they were so traditional in Ireland. I think that probably we took that from the UK. They probably took it from somewhere else. But traditionally now they are made all over Ireland and have been, I'd say, for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. But they're beautiful. Do you make them here in
Ireland? Yes. They are a huge part of I would say, more Easter than St. Patrick's Day.
Okay.
St. Patrick's Day, yes, you find them with maybe a little green icing on top or, you know, but... during Easter, it is the traditional bread that we, you know, for many people. It's,
oh, wow.
Or the sweet bread, you know.
Sweet treat. In Ireland. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, fabulous. And what I love about them as well is I always look at them as being almost like an Easter brioche, because they do taste a little bit like brioche. Lovely fluffy on the outside. But I think that a lot of people don't realize that they're so incredibly simple to make. I always remember, because you see the icing and everything, it looks a little bit intricate. But they are so incredibly easy to make.
People shy away, I think, from yeast breads in general because of the, you know, they think it's too time consuming or, you know, if they, when I read an article recently, somebody, I think it was Mario Batali, said, once you practice and make enough pizza dough, you own yeast. But yeah, working with yeast, it's some people do shy away from it.
Yeah, they do. But it's so simple. I love working with fresh yeast, especially. Mm-hmm. And that magic of when you have the fresh yeast and the sugar on top and they're rubbing the both of them together and then it turns into liquid and then you have your water added in. It's fresh yeast is fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of these dishes that you mentioned, such as the soda bread, the cabbage and bacon stew, or Colcannon.
Yeah.
Now, Colcannon is... Some of these recipes and some of these dishes have not changed for centuries.
No, no, they weren't. And, you know, it's because... You know, I guess a lot of those dishes actually came from the famine. That's the history of them.
Right.
And so you had potato that was used a lot in cooking. And then, of course... because we grew an awful lot of potatoes. I think at one stage the it's over 160 or so varieties of potato in Ireland. But that there are so many different things added in to the potato to make it a little bit more interesting. And one of those things was cabbage. And because cabbage root vegetables grow so well in Ireland because of the kind of more salty soil that we have. Like it sugars it and makes it lovely and sweet, which is the cabbage is. And so Colcannon is exactly that. It is really well mashed potatoes. I love adding cream into my mashed potatoes and butter, salt to please, and Kerrygold. Thank you.
Kerrygold butter. And which we have Kerrygold butter here in America. It's wonderful Irish butter.
Oh yeah, can you get it here a lot?
Oh yes, yeah, certainly.
Yeah, I love it, So
these were dishes, yes, as you say, sort of were invented during the famine. You used poor, as we call it, poor type food, cabbage, turnips, of course, potatoes. There was a blight and they didn't have potatoes. But you had to be quite inventive to find other means of feeding your family during those times. And then, times got better.
Times got better.
Yes. and of course, we... We're fortunate we got a lot of Irish coming to our country during that time, too, and enriched our culture. And then the cooking suddenly evolved. People thought, there's not much to Irish cooking. You know, what do you mean you want to eat Irish food? There's not much to Irish cooking.
Yeah.
But the Irish food has indeed evolved.
It has, absolutely. And I trained as a chef, I then left the kitchen for a while. I set up a commercial kitchen where I was making pâtés and everything, but I actually left to actually work in farmers markets and with producers and with Slow Food, which I just loved. I was just attracted to it immediately when I started the farmers market started. And for me, the whole evolving of the food in Ireland started in the early 1970s when you had these wonderful cheesemakers, you know, pocketed in West Cork, really. This is my own kind of view on it. And you had the likes of, you know, Jeff Gill from Derris Cheese and, Desmond Cheese as well, Bill Hogan from Desmond Cheese and Jana Ferguson from Gabeen Cheese and lots of these wonderful cheesemakers, some of them who actually came to live in West Cork and brought those skills with them. Married an Irish farmer, and you know, and they were looking at ways that how can we make, we'll say, how can we make the milk stretch, and how can we get, you know, more money for the quota of milk, because the quota of milk is quite low, And so that's kind of how it started. When you have a little pocket of producers together, and they all live kind of around the same, it's about 20 kilometres away from each other, they almost like nurtured a lot of kind of the different, say, smaller artists and producers around that area, and they all kind of grew together. And now in West Cork, it's got, like, this small area has more artists and producers than anywhere in the whole of Ireland. And of course, when that happens, when you have the roots of food, and I look at them as being the roots of, you know, what comes on the table,
right.
You know, they produce wonderful food. They kind of attract and kind of spread their knowledge and skills and encourage other, you know, say, daughters and farmers of other, you know, farms to, you know, do something with, you know, oh, you've got pigs. Well, why don't you, you know, start curing bacon, and why don't you smoke it? And, you know, why don't you make salami and chorizo, et cetera? It goes on, and it just has like this wonderful kind of domino effect. And then that food goes to the markets, and people are buying it at the markets. A lot of these people have come from different cultures, like Jane had a fabulous Spanish culture behind her. You know, they start, you know, picking up different cooking tips. And then that goes to the restaurants and the chefs, and then it gets into the table. I can see your face kind of lightening up now, going, we're talking about restaurants where I could visit now. You know, it goes, and it just has this like wonderful domino effect, but it has to come from somewhere. And from my belief, that's where it came from.
From the roots,
and then the farmers markets then just spread it out. So like, you're talking like 15 years ago only, there was probably about, you know, 20 farmers markets in Ireland, and there's now over 200.
Wow.
So with a small country like that, it's like looking at a state, I guess, in America. And we can make change quite fast. And so the food scene now in Ireland is so, so different if somebody visited there 15 years ago.
Indeed it is. Mm-hmm. And I'm just from the visiting chefs that I've spoken to and the quality of the restaurants and the variety of the restaurants.
Yeah.
And, of course, there is a very famous cooking school, the Ballymaloe Cooking School. And that's run by Davina Allen and her daughter-in-law. You studied with Davina, did you not?
I did. I studied with Davina for 3 months, which was an incredible experience. She's definitely one of the. She is probably the biggest icon that we have in the food world in Ireland. She's incredible. And then I went on there then to work at Ballymaloe House, which is under Myrtle Allen. And Darina's brother, Rory O'Connell, was the head chef at the time that I was there, and that was an incredible experience. You know. I guess that where I learned so much. We say the beginning of my restaurant cooking happened there. And it was fantastic to see how they run their operation. They are definitely, you know, farm to fork operation there. They source everything locally. They grow as much as they can. And when you're cooking with that produce, you learn to cook in a different way. You handle everything with care. You're meeting the fishermen coming in the back door, and you can hear Rory on the, you know, the head chef on the phone while luckily this fisherman has a mobile phone and he's calling him when he's on the way in, and he's telling him what he has. We're writing up the menu, you know, as that phone call comes. 2 hours later, you know, this fisherman walks in the back of the door, you know, you smell of fish. Not fish, but lovely fresh sea. You don't want the smell of fish. You know, fresh sea coming in the door with this big box of fresh fish. You cook differently. It's just a different thing.
Yeah.
You know, you handle the fish differently, and you know how, you know, how precious it is.
And yet at the same time, you are learning classic culinary skills.
Absolutely.
And just applying it with all these wonderful ingredients.
Absolutely.
We're going to talk more about this and your own restaurant experiences too when we come back after a short break.
This one's called Third Degree Rug Burns by Tax Star on heritageradionetwork.org.
White Oak Pastures is the only farm in the United States that has its own USDA-inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA-inspected poultry abattoir, a slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high-quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. A full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
Hi, we're back on A Taste of the Past, and I'm talking with Clodagh McKenna, who is a cookbook author, restaurant chef and owner, and a TV celebrity. Tell us a little bit about this television series you have on PBS. It's called Irish Food Trails.
It's called Clodagh's Irish Food Tales, and it's been... Trails as opposed to Tales, sorry. Yeah. That would be an interesting show.
Trails because
Because I travel around Ireland. So I filmed it about 3 years ago, and it was actually 4 series that we did. And so the first 2 series were all based around the farmers markets, because I was involved in running farmers markets. And so we went around to farmers markets, and then from the farmers markets, then we went back to the roots, to the producers, and they showed me how they made all the different produce. We did it basically by region, because of the diversity. Even though Ireland is such a small island, the diversity between, let's say, somewhere like West Cork, which I've mentioned now before, and
isn't that where you're from too?
I'm from Cork, yeah. And there's a lot of jokes about people from Cork thinking that there's nowhere else in the world but Cork. So any Irish person listening in now will be like, oh, there she goes now. But then we made 2 other series, which was actually a fishing show, where I went out fishing with fishermen, and I've got a real passion for fishing, and fishermen as well. I love what they do, and I have such great respect for them. My grandpop and my uncle were both fishermen. My uncle, unfortunately, was lost at sea on a fishing trip, but I just have a great respect for what they do on the island. And so for this show for PBS, what we did is we put all of the shows together. And what we did is we put, for example, every county, we matched up the fishing series and the other series together with it. So you'd get a really wonderful picture of each region. And so for the likes of, I'm going to pick somewhere different now, Dublin, as opposed to the other side of the country. So the east or the west, you know, Dublin, the food producers over in the Dublin and the Wicklow area, and then looking across the way at Galway and Clare area are so completely different. I mean, it's almost like going to 2 different states in America. So like in Dublin, we have wonderful apple farmers there, you know, wonderful pork as well in Wicklow, as well as game, etc. And really funny, you know, new, like, for example, there's this gentleman by the name of David Llewellyn, who's just outside of Dublin, and he's actually even growing his own wine. Mm-hmm. He's got an apple farm there, he's making wine, he's doing balsamic vinegar, etc. And then you go to the other side of the country, because we have this wonderful moist air coming straight in from the Atlantic, you have a lot of people smoking fish. And so because of the curing processes and the drying rooms, etc., you have to have a certain, you know, balance of temperature and moisture and everything. And the fish, the smoked fish from that area is absolutely incredible.
So it's part travelogue, part culinary tales, right?
Yeah, exactly. I also have a good, you know, probably the best part, one of the best parts of the job as well, is I get to sneak into the back of all, you know, restaurant kitchens, and we show this on the show, and the chefs cook for me. So,
oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so they cook, you know, we tell them in advance about, you know, what we've been seeing, and so they link up with the producers and they, you know, cook me up something, and yeah, it's really fun. And then I also do some cooking too. Mm-hmm. I do a little bit of work.
Well, and you are no stranger to the kitchen, in fact, having your own restaurant called Clodagh's Kitchen.
Tell
us, how long has that kitchen, that restaurant been around?
It's been about 2 years. It's within a department store. I guess it's kind of like a little surprise, just like Roberta's on the Heritage Radio is as well, when you come to the department store. You don't necessarily maybe expect to have, you know, a little seasonal, you know, menu restaurant. So we hope that it's a really fun surprise for people when they come in. We have three inside. I've got a bakery as well inside there with an in-house bakery where everything's made from scratch. I also have a very large restaurant for about 180-seater where it's self-service and we do all the homemade favourites with the twist in it. And then at the top floor, then a small little thing. It's a kitchen. It's a little open kitchen. So you come in, you sit down. It's quite French in style interior. And then you come in and sit down and it's a small little seasonal menu, using really delicious locally sourced foods and in season. Like we have rabbit ragout on or famous kind of crab cakes that come from a really good crab supplier. And I'm actually opening up a new restaurant in 2 months' time. So when I get back from here, we're going straight into opening up that restaurant.
So you would call it Irish cooking. I mean, the food is Irish food because it's the food, as you say, it's farm to table. So it's the local food. So it's Irish cooking, right?
It is. Yeah, I guess my style of cooking, because I lived in France and I also lived in Italy. I lived in Italy for 3 years in the north of Italy. And when I was growing up, I spent my summers in France and I still go down to France every year. That I'd say the inspiration of the recipes, because if you can look at it on a map like this, south of France, going up to the north of Italy, that would be my pocket of inspiration for recipes, as well as trips to New York and Roberta's. and then we'll say the source of where the food is coming, the roots of where the food is coming, is you know, all around Ireland. And so I bring those two together and try to make really nice food.
Yeah. Well, you're here in town in New York City promoting your newest book and project.
Yes.
The book called Clodagh's Kitchen Diaries. And you write it like you are keeping a diary. And tell me why did you do a diary book? What was that all about?
Why did I do? My last book was called Homemade and it was received very well. And so my publisher wanted me to write another book, and I'm not one to kind of hurry anything. So, 3 years later, I just wanted to wait until I was ready and I was kind of inspired to do something. And I love cooking by seasons. It's what I live for. Like, don't you love that it's Easter when I look, coming up to Easter and we're looking at hot crisp ones. We're so excited about them. But if we had hot crisp ones every day, I don't know if they'd be so hot, it's like that. So I love cooking by month and excited about what's coming in next and also, I like to get straight to the point when I get home. I've been usually chefing all day in the kitchen. I've probably got a time frame of about a half an hour to get dinner ready. And I want to open up the book and I want them to tell me what to eat. So it's kind of like a selfish book, really, because it's like my companion in the kitchen. I open up July and I know it's going to be full of, delicious fresh fish recipes and salad recipes, etc., for the warmer weather. We hope.
And you have been traveling around quite a bit and had a lot of inspiration from other people, I would imagine.
Yeah, I've traveled a lot. I've been so lucky. I've traveled everywhere a lot in America. I've been to Alice Waters in Chez Panisse. She's always a constant inspiration. I think her, and I was involved with her Slow Food Nation and her Green Kitchen that she did in a few years back in San Francisco. And in Italy, of course, as well. I lived there for 3 years and got to travel all over Italy.
When you were with the Slow Food Movement project?
Yeah, I worked at the University there of Gastronomy. Mm-hmm. And so I worked mainly with all of the non-Italian-speaking students that used to come over, and I used to look after actually creating the syllabus. I had a part of creating the syllabus too, and also bringing lecturers in that would be interesting from around the world. We actually brought Coleman Andrews came over, which was really good fun, and lots of other great food writers as well. So I learned so much there, and actually it was when I came back from Italy to Ireland that I actually then feel ready and confident enough to do my own restaurant.
Well, you're doing a little special restaurant on Saturday, a pop-up. Tell me about that.
Yeah, this pop-up is actually becoming the most epic point of my career to date. I have been a huge fan of Danny Meyer for a long time and his chef team, especially Chris Bradley, who was Grammar's Tavern and is now in Untitled in the Whitney Museum. And Danny has been very supportive and loved the idea of doing a pop-up, and so we're doing it on Saturday. Basically, the menu is called the Irish Elements.
Oh, for the listeners who are outside the New York area, this restaurant is the new restaurant that's been installed in the Whitney Museum here in the city.
Yeah, and the menu is amazing, and Chris Bradley, the chef, is incredible. I'm so excited to be working with them. We're going to be actually prepping in the Gramercy Tavern, which is, it's just all my dreams in one day. But it's an elements menu. So basically we're taking, bacon and cabbage, but we're doing a really contemporary version on it with like slow braised cooked pig's cheeks, which will be kind of bedded, will be rolled in apple and sage and then sliced and then bedded on, you know, very slow spiced red cabbage and then like a floret of caramelized apple, etc. But a highlight for me as well is that our Taoiseach, who's the head of state in Ireland, is actually coming over for the dinner.
Oh my goodness.
Wife,
wow.
Which is really fun. So it's almost like the official St. Patrick's Day dinner that we're holding. So
then everyone get a full belly, then go out and celebrate and go to the parade the following day. Oh no, the parade is Saturday in New York City.
Absolutely.
You know, it's interesting with you coming and you were talking about having a sister-in-law who had lived in Savannah, Georgia for a long time. And I was surprised about the large Irish population in Georgia. And come to find out, you know, we New Yorkers think that our parade is the end-all be-all, right? But the parade, the big parade and the biggest parade and the longest lasting parade started in Savannah, Georgia.
I know.
200 years ago?
My goodness. It's extraordinary, isn't it?
In 1813. I was floored, I have to say.
Yeah, so was I, actually. It was actually for a piece I did for CNN.com. And they asked me, you know, where my favorite place. I started doing research, talking to people, and then, because you need to, as you know, you need to start doing that just to bring back different memories to you as well of what, like, what are the best kind of highlighted place to go to for St. Patrick's. But the history there is incredible of the Irish immigration over to that area, and that's the reason why. But the celebrations actually start the week before St. Patrick's Day, and all that week going all the way up. They have different things, like they plan Irish music sessions in different areas. They have Ceilidhs, which are basically an organised disco, but you're Irish dancing. Uh-huh. Very traditional, boys on one side, girls on the other side. They come together. I love it. That should be the new thing.
I think it would be line dancing. We had you know, line dancing from Texas. We might as well do
Wouldn't
Irish
that be fun?
Dancing.
You could do it in Roberta some night.
We'll talk to them about that. Okay, we got to finish up with a little food here before we end the show. So you have taken, like, I love these dishes you're doing for the pop-up restaurant. Everything old is new again. You're taking these old traditional dishes, but giving them a modern twist.
Yeah.
You do the same thing, and you have a recipe in your book for what you call a mini Guinness.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. We'll have a little dessert here before we end.
I love those. I mean, I love French cooking as well. So I love chocolate mousses when they're done really well with really good quality chocolate. So basically it's a classic chocolate mousse, but you add coffee into it. Then you pour them into try to find the cutest glass that you can find, especially like a little mini pint glass would be perfect. Set it. And then when it comes back out, then you top it with whipped cream and maybe put a little chocolate on top and you've got a mini Guinness. So it would be a wonderful, if you're going to have, we'll say, a little kind of a foodie celebration to bring out smaller, even shot ones out to all your guests and do a big schloentha. Schloentha means cheers, by the way, in Ireland, schloentha, which you all should learn off for St. Patrick's
Day.
Okay,
say that again for me.
Schloentha.
Schloentha. Okay. Well, schloentha to you. And congratulations on all your wonderful events that are happening, the TV series, the book, and the pop-up restaurant and your new restaurant. It was a pleasure to learn from you, and there's so much more I know we could talk about to learn about Irish cuisine. We'll have to take a look at that television series and we'll learn it all. And thanks for listening. This has been A Taste of the Past. I'm your host, Linda Palacio.
The theme song on A Taste of the Past is by the Budos Band. Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.